Shaking the Nickel Bush by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1962. Little Clay Horse. Father, thank you for the voice, for the ears, for the eyes to see. Thank you that we get to enjoy another story and help us to think clearly and to understand what it is that we get to learn about every day. In Jesus' name, amen. Starting the morning after Christmas, we hunted jobs just as hard as we could. We followed every pair of wheel tracks that turned off the road anywhere between Fort Thomas and Safford, on both sides of the Gila River. But we found only one job. Not too bad a one, but Lonnie wouldn't take it. The rancher passed me up like cold soup, but he let Lonnie show him that he was good with a rope and offered him 30 a month. More when roundup time came. Lonnie tried to take us both in on the deal, but when the rancher shook his head, he backed away. "Nah," he said, "it's the both of us or none. My buddy here, he can't drive our automobile, and I wouldn't want to leave him stranded. We'll mosey along, but maybe we'll drop back and see you later." I tried to tell Lonnie that I could learn to drive shiftless without much trouble, and that I thought he'd better take the job. I said I'd try to find one nearby, and that if I didn't, we'd keep in touch with each other during the winter. Then we could find jobs together when roundup time came. When Lonnie shook his head, I thought it might be because he was afraid I wouldn't leave him his saddle and outfit. So I said, "You don't need to worry about the outfit, Lonnie. If you want to, you can send me a little out of your paychecks, but it's yours anyway, and it's been right from the beginning." Lonnie shook his head again, climbed in behind the wheel, and said, "Twist your tail, buddy. Let's get a move on. We're wasting time here." The day Lonnie turned that job down, we had to drive to Safford so I could go to a doctor and get a report card to mail. While I was waiting for the doctor to examine the specimen, I wrote a short letter to Mother telling her our new boss was sending my partner me over into New Mexico for some cattle and that he was going to meet us in El Paso, Texas, so she could write me there. Then, when the doctor was too busy to notice, I took the last $50 bill out of my cuff of my Levi's and put it in the letter. I didn't dare not to, for fear I might be tempted to break it. Then, too, if the doctor charged me $2, I'd only have $1.85 left in my pocket, and I couldn't feel right about telling Lonnie we were dead broke while we still had the 50. During the first few days of January, we worked our way back along the south side of the river, going to see every rancher between the highway and the mountains. The only thing that saved us from getting right down to our last penny was that I made a little clay horse every evening, and that Lonnie had pretty fair luck trading them in the towns for a few gallons of gas or some grub. But it was Shiftless that brought us our best luck. Her shimmying got so bad we couldn't drive her over 5 miles an hour, and we'd put her over so many rough roads in the backcountry that we'd worn out her transmission bands. The brake went first, but Lonnie was able to stop by using the reverse pedal. Then the driving band started slipping so badly that he had to ride the low pedal all the time. As we were pulling into a little town one evening, it gave out entirely, so there was nothing we could do but stop and camp. There wasn't any sense in trying to make clay horses enough to pay for new bands and bushings for the front wheels or for the grub we'd need while we were making the repairs. Lonnie had already traded two horses in that town, one to the only store and one to the only garage. The market was already flooded, but that night I made a horse's head. It was about 6 inches high with an arched neck and curly mane. I worked on it till way after midnight and did the very best job I could. The next morning, I told Lonnie to sleep while I cleaned up our dishes and made my last gluten flour into bread. At 10 o'clock, he was still sleeping, and I had the bread all covered over in the coals to bake, so I took the horse's head and went into town. I didn't go to the store or the garage, but to the bank. It was a little one, not much bigger than a bedroom. A girl about my age was in a cage at the front. Beyond her, I could see the bald head of a man who was writing at a desk, and behind him was the iron door of a vault. I was barely inside the door when the girl in the cage called, "Good morning." Then she noticed the little clay head and sort of squealed, "Oh, you must be the artist who sculpted that cute little horse at the store." With what I had in mind, I couldn't tell her that I wasn't an artist, only a cowhand out of a job. So I went to the window, passed the little model into her and said, "It's an American saddlebred horse. I saw him at a horse show in Boston." The girl was a pretty one, and her eyes sparkled as she turned the head in her hands, oohing and aahing over it. I was so busy watching her that I didn't notice the bald-headed man until he bent over her shoulder, looked at the model, then up at me and asked, "You did that yourself?" On the way in from camp, I'd rehearsed what I was going to say to that banker, but with the girl having said what she did when I came in, and with our being so hard up right then, it didn't come out the way I planned. "Yes, sir," I told him. "I'm the cowboy artist. Just passing through this way. Had to come west for my health. This is just a little toy I knocked out last night by the campfire." Then, to make things sound sort of offhand, I said to the girl, "You may have him if you'd like to. I just make them as a pastime. My regular line is portrait sculpture. You know, making likenesses of people's faces." Quicker than a wink, the banker asked, "What do you charge?" "Well, that depends," I told him. "If I make several in a town just out of clay like this, I charge $10 a piece. But if it's an exclusive commission, if I agree to make only one in the town for the leading citizen or the banker or someone like that, then I charge $25 in advance. But when I make a deal of that kind, I cast them in plaster. So they look like marble, you know. If they're only clay, they warp out of shape as soon as they dry." The old gentleman peered at me over the top of his glasses and said, "You don't say." I knew right then I had him hooked, but I was scared. Anyone could have seen that he'd been a range man before he became a banker. His face was craggy and weather-beaten. There were deep sun wrinkles flaring out from the corner of his eyes, deep clefts in his cheeks, and if he had false teeth, he wasn't wearing them. When I'd lived with Ivan, I'd modeled several busts of young fellows we worked with, and some of them had come out fairly good. But I'd never tackled anything so tough as a face like that banker's. My mouth was so dry my tongue clucked when I said, "Yes, sir." "They'll warp till you hardly recognize them if they're left in clay." "Hmm," he said. "You ought to have come along 40 years ago. I might have gone for that marble deal, but I'm not just what a man might call an artist model anymore." I thought I saw my way out. The juice ran back into my mouth, and I said, "Oh, that doesn't make any difference. All I'll need would be an old type of old picture or a tintype. If you've got something like that, it would be easy enough to use it as a model. I could make you look any age you wanted me to." "Hmm," he said again. "There might be an old tintype or two around the house at that. Tell you what you do. You visit with Mabel here a few minutes, and I'll go take a look." I did visit with Mabel, and it was the best part of my selling job. After I told her I'd cast a horse's head in plaster for her, I mentioned that I was pretty busy and didn't know just how long I could stay in that part of the country. But I said that if she wanted to call some of the other bankers in the nearby towns, I'd be glad to stay around till I'd finished their bus. She wanted to start telephoning right away, but I told her she'd better wait till we saw how her boss liked the one I was going to do of him. The tintype that banker brought back must have been 50 years old. It was so badly faded I couldn't have copied it, even if I'd had the ability. About all I could make out was that he'd had a heavy head of hair and a good big mustache, both parted in the middle and twisted into spit curls at the sides of his face. "Don't know as you can make much of it," he told me as he held the tintype up by the window, "but that's the way I used to look. Let's see. That was at the time of my first marriage." I took the tintype, turned it back and forth a little so the light would strike it in different ways, and peered at it closely. "I believe I could do a pretty good job with this one," I told him. "Some of them are faded a lot worse than this. I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll take this along with me, and you pay just $10 down. Then, if you like the clay model, when I bring it in tomorrow, you can pay the balance, and I'll make up the marble-like casting. If you don't like the model, we'll just call the deal closed. Is that fair enough?" He thought it was, and gave me the 10. If I hadn't been the cowboy artist, I'd have run all the way back to camp with that $10, but it wouldn't have seemed very dignified. So I walked as slowly as I can make myself walk. Well, that's a pretty good story. And that's more in character with Ralph and his ability to create things to do and make, and how he's capitalized on things he's known how to do in the past. It's pretty cool. I think it's actually amazing to be able to make sculptures. So, very fun. I love you guys. Have a great rest of your day.